KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
First Lady's Focus is brought to you in part by Educational Employees Credit Union, EECU, Smarter Banking since 1934. We're excited to have another very special guest with us today, and as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Well, once again, we are very thrilled to have a fantastic guest and a Fresno State alum here with us. Once everybody hears this name, they're going to know who I'm talking about, because I always tease her that she is the most photographed lady in Fresno. She is everywhere. If you are a Facebook friend of hers, you will get exhausted just looking at all the places she goes in one day. I feel like such an underachiever, but I want to say good morning and welcome to Lisa Caceres. She's the president of Angels of Grace, and thank you for being here.
Good morning. What so a pleasure nice it is. You. This is so awesome to be here. Thank you, Mary. This is truly an honor.
Well, Lisa is the president of Angels of Grace, and Angels of Grace is a foster care family agency. Mm-hmm. She is going to talk today about some of the services that she provides for women and for children in the community. You will not meet a person with a bigger heart than Lisa Caceres. Aww. And when Joe and I arrived a year ago, we were going to the different receptions where we were meeting people from the community. And I think that I had a love at first sight with Lisa.
We were kindred spirits.
Our eyes met across the room and we ran towards each other and hugged. And I just call her Mama every time I see her now.
Yes, I love it. I love it.
Because you are such a loving person. You actually have a glow that's about you every time I see you. Your spirit is such a spirit of love. And when people hear your story, they can only be inspired to know that it is possible to be a person who exudes love and caring and can impact other people's lives in such a positive way, even if you didn't have a positive start.
Wow, you just put a big happy face on my heart. Thank you. You know what? God is love. And I just thank him every day that I get to be on this side of the fence today. And, you know, this roller coaster ride that we're on every day, we never know when we're going to be in a place where we're going to be reaching out or reaching right. out. So it's just, you know, we have to be in a place of love, because life is fragile. And if we can right. live each day with love and we can share that with everyone that we run into, then, you know, the light will have to overtake the darkness. In the midst of all this darkness, there's going to be that little bit of light. And, you know, we each have to be the change we want to see in the world.
That's right. I agree with you. And I appreciate your dedication, which is above and beyond a normal person's. She's drinking some kind of magic juice every morning, Julie. It's got to be green.
Is that what's in the bottle?
And, because when I had met you at that first reception, you were telling me that as soon as you were going to leave there, and this was late, mm-hmm. you were going straight over to the Children's Hospital because you were going to go hold one of your babies. And she'll go to the hospital and hold the babies that are preemies until they gain weight, where they're able to leave the hospital and to be adopted. Oh. Lisa's the mama that goes and rocks the babies. And I said, if you ever need a volunteer, I'll be right there for you.
And I think that's really where our hearts really connected, because I was leaving. It was a 3-pound baby that was actually a preemie, and the mother was very young, and mm-hmm. she left the baby at the hospital. So there was no one but, you know, the people that extended themselves to this precious child. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that, you know, you said you would go with me and hold the baby was like, wow, here's the president's wife, first lady, that's willing to take time out of her life to go hold a baby. It's going to make me cry now, because it's just such a great world that we live in when we decide that we want to be a blessing. Even in the midst of this child not having a mother that could hold him, we were right. all being the moms and the nurses and the county workers. And it really does take a community to take care of our babies, because a lot of them, the parents might not be in a good place to right. be able to do that for them. So we get to pay it forward. I get to pay it forward every day of my life.
Well, and I think, too, that you can never underestimate the power of touch.
Mm.
I have great memories of being held, of being rocked, mm-hmm. and with my children doing that, and even with adult members in my family when mm-hmm. they were sick, taking them into your lap and holding, oof.
It's powerful.
Holding yeah. them and taking them back to that place where mm-hmm. they could be cradled and receive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's beautiful on both ends. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful to be able to give, but it's also beautiful to receive it. Mm-hmm. And and to be able to recognize the value of it, mm-hmm. and how important it is to the human experience for us to touch each other, for us to touch each other with a hug, for us to touch each other with a compliment or a high five. Mm-hmm. You know, all those things go into letting us know somebody cares about me. Somebody cares that I'm here, mm-hmm. and they want me to be happy.
Yeah.
And they want me to be successful. Mm-hmm. And doing that with children, and then the way that you're able to help women to see themselves in a different light. And somebody did that with you. Tell us about where you started and what was the turning point to where you became the giver.
You know, we all have a journey, and the interesting part of our life journey is we don't know what's around the corner. We can just mm-hmm. kind of guess, but we just never know. We can have goals and we can have plans, but ultimately it is a day-by-day experience. And when I was growing up, my whole goal in life was to become a wife and have children. You know, I was raised in a religion where that was kind of what you did. And mm-hmm. then, and in my family culture, that's how we did things. And so by the time I was 18 years old, I was 18, May 27th, and on June 27th, I got married.
Oh, boy.
Had a huge wedding, the whole traditional Latino, you know, 16 couples, a big dress.
Menudo everything. The next morning.
It was, yeah, menudo and the mole. We can't forget the chicken mole. And it was my true Cinderella experience, mm-hmm. something I had been preparing for since I was 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And so I just really, the plan was, you know, happily ever after. And unfortunately, that happily ever after turned into the greatest nightmare of my life. And I ended up in a very bad, abusive relationship. And being, you know, the martyr that I was raised to be, I always thought, well, la mujer es sufrida, which means a woman was made to suffer. And so I tried my very best to do everything right, to be thin, to get up early, put my makeup on, be the perfect little wife. And, you mm-hmm. know, anybody that knows the cycle of domestic violence knows that it's a very ugly cycle that we get caught up in. You're almost like this little hamster running in this little race that you can't get out of. Mm. And if you understand it and you're a person of hope that wants to believe that tomorrow is going to be a better day, then it's real easy to end up a victim. And that was me. You know, I end up in this situation. I would be walking on eggshells and then boom, something would happen. The explosion. I was in the middle of this horrible domestic violence situation. And then the next day he felt guilty. I'm sorry. It's never going to happen again. Mm-hmm. The whole honeymoon period. And you want to believe it.
Right.
And so you just end up in this cycle of craziness. And I always say it's like a sick dance, you know, and you learn how to dance with that person. And if you don't learn a different step, you're going to be doing the sick dance for the rest of your life if you don't end up dead.
How long were you in that relationship?
I was in that relationship for 6 years, mm. and they were the longest 6 years of my life. You know, and the interesting part of this whole journey, to me, women are amazing. Women have this kindred kind of camaraderie, the comadre thing mm. that happens. And when I was in my situation of domestic violence, it was a lady down the street that was in the same situation that I was in. So if the police wasn't at her house, they were at my house. And one of us was being beat, you know, and her husband was an alcoholic, too. And she had all these children, and she would say, comadre, it's going to be okay, you know. And she was the one that taught me how to put the makeup on to cover the bruises, and she would teach me how to wrap my ribs and do all kinds of stuff. And the goal,
she thought that she was helping you to endure it.
Endure. Because
instead of get out of it.
The goal was, and as she, you know, people inspire each other with what they know, mm-hmm. she'd say, mija, she'd say, nobody's going to love your children like their father. So, you know, you want to keep your eye focused on when you become an old lady, you're going to sit on the porch. And you're going to drink coffee and you're going to be able to enjoy your grandchildren. And he's going to get over this because, you know, he's young and this is just what he's going through. It's just a phase. And so my goal was to look at getting old with my husband, enjoying my children on the porch, drinking coffee. So no matter how bad things got, that was where my focus was.
She was trying to give you good advice.
She was trying to be a good. And then she would put the makeup on me and she'd go, yeah, yeah, mija, yeah, mija. So she became my yaya sister. So, I would say, hi, yaya sister, because I was constantly, she was having to console me. And that was her way of doing it was, yaya, mija, mm-hmm. yaya, mija. So it almost became a joke. We had to learn to laugh about, you know, being victims of domestic violence because it was what we were living.
Yes.
And you have to try to put a little bit of spice in whatever you do. So she was really good about that. Well, one day the police officer, and back then it was like the same police officer and the routes that were always the same. So he comes to my house. It's early in the morning and he looked at me and he looked white. I mean, he was shocked and it was almost like something I was used to living because I said, did I get beat up last night and didn't know it? You know, I kind of made a joke out of it. And he said, you think you're so funny, don't you? He says, well, your comadre, your... He had killed her that night. They had got into an accident. They got into a fight and she was stabbed in the kitchen and she died.
Oh, my God.
And so my whole focus changed in that moment. Was like, I was not looking at getting old with my husband. I was looking at not ending up in a body bag coming out of my house, trying to survive. And, you know, that was the aha moment in my life. And unfortunately, you know, her children ended up without a mom, and he ended up probably going to prison. And they were actually both really great people. But, you know, when you're in a place of illness and you're not learning healthy ways to deal with your life and how to address issues of domestic violence or substance abuse, those are the results of that kind of life. Mm-hmm. And it was just shortly after that, my ex-husband came home like 3 a.m. and he wanted a chicken sandwich. I always remember. Now, you know, the interesting part about this journey is our children are watching everything, and they almost pick up our spirit. They absorb what we're thinking, how we're feeling. And my oldest son, who was 4 at the time, I had a 2-year-old daughter too. It was almost like we had huddled and said, okay, if he comes home and acts violent, we're going to leave. We're going to escape. We almost like we had a plan.
You had your
where before plan. Where before he would take my daughter and hide under the bed until the drama was over. And then we would all come out and act like nothing happened. My yaya sister would come in, put the makeup on me, wrap my ribs, or, you know, and then we moved on and nobody wanted to look back. But that was our life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that day, my ex-husband grabbed me and took me in the kitchen, and they actually grabbed me by my hair and grabbed me, and I went dragging into the kitchen. And my oldest son, took my daughter and he put her in the back of a little Chevy Chevette.
Oh.
And he grabbed my keys and he said, "Mommy, Mommy, run. I got the keys." So he was this little 4-year-old kid.
Oh my goodness.
Had the responsibility of rescuing us. And
you could see that in his face.
He was so scared because he knew that was it. You know, I got in my car and it was a miracle I didn't kill him, because I hit the reverse and he was right behind trying to stop it. And my daughter was thrown in the back seat and he was there, and I had no shoes on. I had a robe, and I hit reverse and he moved, and I ended up in the middle of Fresno with 50 cents in my purse. And I had no money. And I knew I didn't want to call the people I knew, because they were just going to tell me to go back home.
To go back.
That it was going to get better. And you know, that police officer had given me a card from the Marjorie Mason Center. And I remember pulling over and praying out to God. And I asked God to be my husband, my provider, everything I needed to take care of my children. And I remembered I actually went in to get some tissue that was in my pocket, because I was crying and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I pulled out the card from the Marjorie Mason Center.
Wow.
And,
my goodness.
And I was right in front of a telephone. Back then, they had those pay phones.
Yes.
And I had just enough money, I thought, to make that phone call. And I ended up, they actually ended up coming in to get me, because I didn't know where I was and I didn't know how to get there. And, you know, I went there and they put shoes on my feet and they hugged me and they told me that this wasn't the life that I was supposed to be living, that there was something better for us.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, it's amazing, because in that moment, all you want to do is just survive, and you just want to get to the next moment.
Right.
And it was just enough. There was enough support. There was enough love. There was enough people with passion and purpose that probably had been in that same situation that got me to that next step, the next step. And then I was sitting with all these other women who were just like me, looked just like me. Some were educated, some were not. Some were brown, some were white, some were, I mean, we were just a whole diversity of women.
Uh-huh.
And we had one thing in common. We were trying to survive. We were all victims of domestic violence. And so we became very connected. We became yaya sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting in this, they had a place where we could all congregate, and we were watching the TV, and this commercial came out and it said, "Are you lost? Do you not know where you're going? Are you confused?" And I said yes to all the above. And it was so funny, because it was a commercial for the registration at City College, and they even made a song out of it. It was like 442-4600. So I went through the whole day singing that song, and then finally decided, you know what, if I'm going to get out of this marriage, I'm going to have to, I don't want to be on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked up the phone and I called 442-4600. And it was actually a counselor that picked up the phone that wasn't supposed to be picking up the phone. And he said, "You know, I'm teaching some classes." I told him I was at the Marjorie Mason Center. I didn't know what I was going to do with my kids. He said, "Look, you bring them tomorrow. This is my classroom. I have assertive behavior, study skills, just 2 other classes. But assertive behavior was the one that really helped me the most."
Really,
yeah, that really caught my attention. And it was Mr. Perkins, and I went into his classroom. He filled out my financial aid.
Wow.
And let me sit there with my kids every class. And then I would, I would look at my children and I would tell them if they would let me graduate that I was going to take them to Disneyland. So whenever they would get a little bit, you know, fussy and stuff, I would look at them and say, Disneyland, and they would get up. They wanted to go to Disneyland. And, you know, it was amazing because they were awesome. They would sit there and they were going to college with mom.
Yes.
I didn't even know that there was childcare on campus. And then the students started helping me because they thought it was so cool that I had all these kids. And then after the Marjorie Mason Center, I wasn't feeling well. So they took me to the hospital thinking that, you know, maybe it was stress and stuff. Well, I found out I was pregnant with my third child.
Oh, my goodness.
So here I was. I knew it was bad because now, I mean, it couldn't be worse because I was pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it's just community. You know, the students thought it was so cool that I had these kids. They had a sign-in, sign-out sheet for my children. One would have Alicia, the other one would have the other one. Mm. And then as I had the baby, they would help me with the baby, and they would all give me a quarter at the end of the week. So I could buy Pampers because I was using regular cloth diapers because I didn't have money.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't mind helping me with the baby, but they didn't want to deal with the cloth diapers. So especially the guys. I mean, I even had the guys that were going to school at the police academy at City. I started tutoring them. So you had these big old burly guys walking around with this baby in their, you know, the little pouch because they were all trying to help me.
Yeah.
So it truly took a community. And then one day we're all sitting there around the, we used to sit in that little table that was in front of the library. And one of the guys comes and says, did you know there's childcare on campus over there by Wendy's or one of the, and I was like, no. So we all ran and we found out and we told a story how everybody was helping me with my kids. Uh-huh. So we were able to get my older kids into childcare on campus.
Great.
And my original goal was to get the certificate to become a dental hygienist.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my plan. And then I just started becoming so passionate about helping women. I started doing restraining orders, serving people that were in domestic violence situations. And then I got a job on campus in EOP working for Pauline Fuller.
Mm.
And she hired me because she was my instructor. And she just said, you need to go and start some support groups for single women. So she hired me and I could go whenever I wanted. So I started single groups on campus and
After you had your AS degree?
No, that was during the time.
Oh, during the time.
City College. And then when what was really interesting is once she said, no, you need to get an associate science in human services. She kind of told me this is what I was supposed to do. I went, okay. And I said, how long is that going to take? She goes, oh, not that long. She never told me. She just said, oh, not that long. So we kind of went day by day.
Uh-huh.
And then what ended up happening was, okay, so then she says, you need to go and get your bachelor's in social work at Fresno State. I was like, oh, no, only smart people go there. She goes, no, you can do this. You can do. So she did all the paperwork for me. I got in before I knew it, I was in. And then she even got me a job here on campus working for Delma Garcia. So my EOP office ended up here. And then I came here on campus, started getting real passionate. And then I decided we needed childcare for the library. I don't think I've shared this with you. So no. I wanted to do childcare in the library because I used to bring my kids. That was back in the microfilm days. So my kids would fall asleep. Right. They would fall asleep around my feet. And I would say, oh, my babies, they were just so beautiful. But we need to have a place for them to go to so I can do my research.
Uh-huh.
So I asked one of them, how do we get childcare here in the library here at Fresno State? And she said, well, you know, there's a lot of money in ASI. They can do anything. And I said, well, how do I get that money? And she said, you need to become a senator. And I said, well, what does that mean? She goes, I don't. So I went and I found out that I needed to campaign and win so that I could become a senator. And I told my kids, we're going to become a senator so we can put so we can put a child care center in the library. And they were like, yay, mom's going to be a senator. And so we made flyers. We started handing them out. And I became senator at large number 4.
Oh, my goodness.
I sure did. And then I ended up helping with that. You know how we have the child care here and the educational building?
Yes.
That was all part of that during that time when I was a senator. We were saying, okay, we needed more child care.
Different places.
So it was amazing. And then Francine Opuda, she said, you know, you're so passionate about helping women.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to be in charge of on violence against women on campus. So that year that I served as a senator, I also served violence against women on campus. We helped women deal with some of the issues of abuse. And during the whole time, my kids are, you know, they're just going along with me and I'm still not able to get them to Disneyland.
Oh.
So because I was rich in spirit, low on cash. So I figured, how can I do this? How can I do this? So there was an opportunity to apply for a scholarship here on campus.
Hmm.
You could go to any university and they would give you money to go. And if I could stay under the budget, I could take my kids.
Oh, wow.
So I applied for it. It was like a pre-doctorate kind of scholarship through the McNair. Because I was a McNair scholar and a Muse scholar here at Fresno State. That was a God thing, because I don't know how I got these good grades being so busy.
I was going to say, you were the person who thought you couldn't make it, and here
and
you
I was. I ended up becoming, and then I got the scholarship.
That's wonderful.
So when I came back from Florida with my children, we went to Disney World. Part of that application was I had to apply to go into the graduate degree program at Fresno State, which was my master's in social work. Mm-hmm. Never intending to go into that. I just did it for this, to take my kids to Florida. Yeah, that was my whole goal. When I got home, I was accepted. And so I thought, no way. There's just no way. So I told my kids, you know, I always told you guys that once I graduated, we were going to start eating meat. No more ground beef. Well, can you guys eat ground beef and top ramen for another 2 years while I get my master's? And they said, Mom, yes. So we did it. Actually turned into 5 years. I think I've been here the longest of anybody. But it happened. I got my degree.
What I love about your story is, as you're telling this, it's not you weren't the mom going to school with the kids. You were a team.
Oh, yeah. And
the
still.
The kids were a team. They knew, okay, Mama needs to do this. This is, we have to be quiet, or we need to listen, or we need to go here. And they trusted that you were going to take them to Disneyland. You know, they believed you, and they could see you being such a positive role model that you were doing everything you could to make things better for all of you. I love that you were like this little Casadas team going around exactly. campus.
Yeah.
And
you know, we all have experiences, and they could either break us or they could make us make us better. You know, with all this passion I have of these people that have been in my life and people that have been able to allow me to be a part of their life and help me become who God created me to be, I believe. I get up every morning now, and when I get called, I'm still the one on call 24 hours a day with Child Protective Services. I was up last night at 3 a.m. rescuing two little ones coming out of a dark place. And then just a couple days before, I had a little 4-month-old with a fractured skull at 3 a.m. I mean, you know, we are living in a time where, you know, we can't say these things because they're minors, so it can't be on the news and stuff. So a lot of this stuff people don't realize is going on here in Fresno, California, and it's happening at all hours of the day. And we need to come together as a community. You know, we have this clothing closet in the office that people come in and donate their gently used clothing. This is like gold to my kids. I mean, the kids I got last night were in such filth that the county workers were getting sick coming out of the house because it was so dirty and filthy. And these babies were living in that.
Yes.
And I get kids coming out of meth labs, and I bring them into the office. The office that we have looks like a house. It's looks like the White House, actually. You know, God has been really good. My girlfriend owns that. So you get caught in my world and everything. We end up sharing it with the children, but it looks like a house. So the kids come in, they're thinking they're coming to grandma's. I bathe them, get them nice clothes. If they have lice and bugs, I de-lice them, and, you know, whatever I have to do. If I'm there with them all night cleaning out their hair before I take them to the foster home so they don't go infect everybody else, that's what we do.
Right.
And it really is an honor. You know what? I go into these hospitals and I take out these babies and nobody questions me. They just hand them over to me. And I walk out and sometimes my heart is just so full of, I'm in awe that God would let me do that. He would hand these children to me and know and let me let the community be a part of something so great as helping this human become whole.
Well, and you have such great compassion. And it's not that I said that you're the most photographed woman. It's not just you're everywhere because it takes money to have Angels of Grace and to have diapers and to have formula and things. And I see you at events everywhere. You are doing the glamorous side of it, which is what people see a lot of, which is attending the banquets and doing interviews and promoting. But what you just said now, you're bathing them, you're delousing them, you're hugging them, you're doing every part of it. You're beyond just the front person for Angels of Grace. It goes to the core of who you are, and that's where you give from. And that's how people can turn over a child to you, knowing that you're going to find the best place possible for them and that you're going to love them beyond what they've been experienced before, because you exude that all the time.
Well, you know what? And I'm humbled by that because, you know, it was people in my life that had that same kind of passion, and really it's all about love. You know, and the greatest love of all is the love we get from God, and God's put us here to love each other to wholeness regardless of how broken we are, because we're all going to be broken. I mean, and that's what I think, those little cracked pieces in our lives, the light can shine through so that we can have the ability to share hope with the world.
So at what point did you get the idea that you were going to start your own foster care agency, Angels of Grace? And what is the process of doing that? I would imagine that's a huge mountain to climb. And you were brave enough to think you were going to do it.
You know what? Honestly, I was serving foster children before I started Angels of Grace. And then the county workers, you know, I had to do my internship in emergency response at night because you have so many hours you have to do when you get your master's. So, I mean, I was out there with the county workers and we'd be pulling kids out of the pits of hell. And I'd say, okay, where are the diapers? And they're like, we don't have no diapers. Where's the foster parents? And I'm like, wait a minute. We need to have a supply of this stuff. And then one particular social worker, Catherine, would say, okay, when you grow up and you start your agency, remember that. Take a note of all that stuff we need so you can do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just like it was almost like I don't think I said, oh, I'm going to start an agency. It was just something that kind of evolved, you know, and I was working for other agencies and I'd say, this is what we need. But there's a lot of money that takes, you know, buying diapers and formula. Mm-hmm. That takes from their budget. So you have to be really passionate about wanting to provide these things. And then we get the kids mostly for 2 days and then they go to grandma who's 65, who never intended to have kids again. Mm-hmm. And she's not going to get help for 30 days. And what do we do as humans who care for each other, who want what's best for this child? We're going to give her what she needs for 30 days until she gets on her feet. And then we're going to support her. And that's kind of how we do things at Angels of Grace. You know, I mean, somebody did it for me and all mm-hmm. my social workers. Every single social worker I have was a student of mine. Mm-hmm. So they've stayed with us, you know, and I believe that they were picked from God. I believe right. we all work for God. We're just all part of this great opportunity that we have each and every day. The community comes alongside us. North Park Church came in and I used to come in at night and look through my bins and try to get, okay, here's a size 2 shirt, size 2 pants. Yay, I found them. Let's go. And now they came in this year and they put shelving and the ladies come in and they put the clothes together. So when I come in at 3 a.m, all I need to do is pick out the bin and all the clothes is already in one little bundle. Mm-hmm. And then they come in and they put a teddy bear with a blanket in a little bag. So when I go pick up my newborns, I just take the bag and everything's in there. Right. I mean, people have just been amazing. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of how it works. You know, I get up every morning when I get called and it's really interesting because it's almost like I wake up 5 minutes before the county calls me. They always ask me, don't you ever sleep? I know it's God. God's waking me up. Okay, we're going to have to get ready because we got some babies coming in. And I wake up, I'm getting water and the phone rings. And then, you know, here I go. You know, I'm ready to go pick up my babies, take them to the homes. And the county workers also, you know, they go to the home. But my job is to take what they need so that when mm-hmm. they go to bed, they have nice, clean clothes on, even if it's just for those 2 days.
Right.
And just like somebody put me into something warm and put little shoes on my feet and mm-hmm. put me in a warm blanket and told me that I had value and that this shouldn't be happening. You know, I get to do that every day. Mm-hmm. And it's just an amazing life when you just live each day fully.
Well, your hard work was recognized last year when the Fresno County Women's Chamber of Commerce nominated and named you the Mother of the Year.
Wow.
And it was a surprise, right?
It was a huge surprise. I am humbled and just, you know, I'm still amazed at my staff and nobody in Fresno even, there was no inkling that was even something that was in my sphere of anything. I mean, mm-hmm. I walked into my office and then my staff said my neighbors had a fundraiser for the Alzheimer's the day before. So they said, hey, can the media use our parking so they can do a story? And I said, oh, yeah, that's fine. So when I drove into my office and I saw every station parked in our parking lot, the lights didn't go on because I thought they were there for my neighbors, you know. And then I walk in and every single station is there. Their lights are on me. I walk in and I am so shocked. And I look around and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what's going on? And I was just overwhelmed and shocked. And then when they took out the most beautiful tiara, it was just amazing. It was just spectacular. It was like,
and we have a great picture of that we'll put up on our website so that everybody can see you with your tiara.
I think I slept with that on for like 4 days.
I don't blame
And you know
you.
What? I got to tell you, this tiara, I still have it in my office. It's in a little box. And my girls come in and, Miss Lisa, can I put on the princess crown? Because, you know, I'm a princess. Aww. So they wear my tiara and they walk around. I tell them that they're special. Their father's a king, that they have value and they have worth. So we're getting a lot of mileage from that tiara. And you know what? I thought I was going to have to crown the next Mother of the Year. Uh-huh. And the women of the Fresno County Women Chamber of Commerce says, no, that's your crown. She gets her own crown.
She gets her own.
I was so happy. I was like, I get to keep it.
Yay. Well, our coach, Rodney Terry, from the men's basketball team, has a new life skills series where he invites leaders from the community to come in and talk to the men's basketball team and to inspire our young men in different ways of performing better and being better people and more well-rounded. And you recently spoke to them.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about what is the message do you think young men need to hear in order to stop this cycle and to feel like they are being better parts of society? And what's important for a young man who is wanting to be a leader?
I think people have to know who they are, and they have to understand what triggers them. And so understanding what we've been exposed to and how we can change our thinking patterns is so important. Like I was sharing with my friends, they were just awesome. I just fell in love with all those. They were so awesome. You know, I shared with them is that you have to learn how to do things different. You have to have different tools in your life to be able to respond differently. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that comes from knowing who you are. And there's a wonderful counseling program here in Fresno State that I used to use. I mean, I used to go there and deal with my issues and then learning how to, okay, if you're angry, if this person says something that is triggering you, especially when you're in something like a sports, because you're trained to be aggressive,
right.
You're trained to win the game. And then you go from that to having this woman in your face telling you something. If you don't learn a different way of dealing with it, then you're going to act the same way. So you need to learn, okay, I need to walk away. I need to count to 10. I need to maybe not be in this relationship until I can be healthy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always used to tell my girls, because we had a safe haven home where I used to have young women who were emancipating out of foster care. And I would tell my ladies, I'd say, you have to be whole. Because when you get two half people together, you're going to have a freak. You don't want to you don't want a freak for your life. You don't want to live in that kind of a ugly place. You want to be whole. And when you finally, if God sends you the right person, you're going to end up being a good partnership. Because this whole journey in life is about being partners, friendship partners, yaya partners. You know, we can encourage each other for the good or for the bad.
That's right.
So you want to make sure that you're healthy enough that you're going to be connected with somebody that's healthy. Because if you guys become famous, you're going to have all this money. You're going to have all this fame
and pressure.
And you're going to have somebody that's going to look at that and not you.
Mm-hmm.
You want somebody that's going to look in your soul and say, you know, I love that person. Because all this stuff can go tomorrow.
That's right.
And then you're stuck with that person. You want it to be a soul connection. And the guys, you know, they kind of got that. And it's,
well, that's a great message.
Well, I hope they were okay with that. But really, it's a message that we have to work every day on.
Yes.
You can't just give somebody the, you know, 2 + 2 = 4 message.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, every day you got to get up and you got to work on yourself. Because if you don't work on yourself, this is where you're going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
And every day I have to wake up and I have to be intentional about how I'm going to respond to people that day. Am I going to be living by the soul or by my flesh? We need to be receptive as humans. We need to be receptive to each other. You know, when I left, they were hugging me and they were, I mean, you know, they're just human. And they gave me a basketball with their names, you know, they all signed it.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, honestly, I was impressed with their soul.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know the famous part of who they are, you know, and that they go and travel and, but their souls connected with mine. And if I saw them out on campus, you know, they would come up and I'm sure they'd give me a hug and we would be connected in the soul because we shared something real intimate, which is, you know, our life. I'm sure a lot of people come out of abuse, you know, and they don't know different ways of what is a healthy situation? What is a healthy relationship? What can I compare that to?
Right.
You know, going to church and getting people in your life that can pour goodness and greatness into you is such an important piece of who we are.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lisa, for sharing your incredible story. We're so proud to have you as a Fresno State alum, and we're so proud that our campus was able to be a part of your change in your life and your success, and that you've taken that and you've spread it out in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a ripple in the ocean, and you just sent out all these different directions, all these different emotions of love to people who need it. And it started with people showing you love. And I thank you for being here and sharing this time with Julie and I this morning and sharing your story with our listeners.
Incredible story. And you set such a great example.
Well, thank you. And it was an honor being here with you. I love you both. I mean, it's just love, love, love. That's what it's all about.
That's right.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, President, CEO, and founder of Angels of Grace Foster Family Agency, Lisa Caceres. And of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. First Ladies Focus is brought to you in part by Educational Employees Credit Union, EECU, smarter banking since 1934. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.